So the Sabbath has been important to me for a long time. Of course, my dad's a pastor and all, but I'm talking about when I finally figured things out for myself. And then, you know, you had to kind of make a decision on things and why things are important and how far you're going to go with it. And when I was in the Army, I don't know, some of you, probably most of you realize, I got brought up for court-martial twice over refusing to go to classes and activities on the Sabbath that I didn't think were related to patient care, that were vital, just regular everyday classes. And so they brought me actually up for court-martial, set me up for trial and everything. And I told them that they could go ahead and do it, and did they realize who I was? I was a little bit cocky, but and they're like, well, who are you? And so I was like, well, if you're going to go through with this, you'll soon find out. And so I said, can I have a phone call? And they're like, sure, you can have a phone call. And so I called my dad, and then he called the General Conference, and they called Rear Admiral Black. He was the highest ranked chaplain in the armed services at the time, and he's currently the chaplain for the U.S. Senate, right? Well, he calls me on the phone about 20 minutes later, calls me on the phone, and he says, hey, tell those guys I'm on my way to represent you at your court-martial, right? And I'll be there shortly. Just tell them to hold off. I'll be there shortly. And then call me back and tell me what they said. And so I told them, Admiral Black is on his way. He's going to represent me at my court-martial. And they're like, who are you? So they discussed it amongst themselves and came back and said, never mind, right? So I called Admiral Black back up, and they said, never mind. They canceled the whole court-martial. And he says, that's what I thought. And I was like, sir, you mind if I ask you a question? And he said, no, go ahead. And I was like, you're not really on your way, are you? And he said, nope, I'm not. He said, I just figured they would see the light, right? So anyway, but several more things happened to me like that. And so it kind of got exciting for me. And then it got to be concerning recently as well, because a lot of my friends that I grew up with in the church have left the church over the Sabbath. And recently, some of Sigrid's family, close family, have left the church because of the Sabbath. It's like, why in the world would anybody leave the church because of the Sabbath? And so I thought, I put this thing together primarily because of the wife of Sigrid's cousin who left the church. And I wanted to give her some ammunition for her own husband, right? And so this is a small taste of what I actually put together. I put together a book, like about 300 some pages. And so this is a little glimpse of that, so hopefully you'll bear with me. But to me, it's fascinating, the history of the Sabbath, the reason for the Sabbath, why God created the Sabbath. It's all very interesting. And maybe it's not going to be like a sermon style, more like a history lesson, but hopefully you'll get something out of it, because I certainly find it really interesting for myself. And this is the reason why I consider it to be important. So why continue to keep the Sabbath? Yeah, and for me, it's based on three main reasons, and I think for most Seventh-day Adventists, as well as other Sabbatarians who keep the Sabbath, these are the three main issues. Number one, God wrote it with his own finger on stone. First of all, God doesn't write very much, right? There's only a couple places in the Bible where it's mentioned he wrote something, right? And this is one of them, and he wrote it in stone. And you're like, okay, why did he write it? And then he took those stone tablets, and he put them inside of the Ark of the Covenant, and all the other Mosaic laws got put outside of the Ark in a little box. You can see a little picture there, right? And so he automatically distinguished, separated in value, the Ten Commandments from the other Mosaic laws, right? Some were more valuable or more high level than others, right? And so he put them inside the Ark. You know, one lady told me when I mentioned this out, because he said, there's no distinction in the Bible between the Mosaic laws of any kind. I was like, there certainly is. God drew his distinction. He put some of them inside the ark and the rest of them outside. That's a distinction, right? And she says, well, maybe he made the ark too small, right? I was like, I don't think so. You're reaching for it now, right? So the other reason, main reason, is that Jesus himself kept the Sabbath, right? And he taught other people to do it. In fact, it was his custom to go to the synagogue on the Sabbath, and he got up several times and spoke on the Sabbath in the synagogue. And he also honored the Sabbath so much that he didn't get resurrected on the Sabbath. He waited a whole day to honor the Sabbath as our example, right? And his disciples also rested while Jesus was resting in the tomb. They also rested in obedience. It says specifically in obedience to the commandment. Right? So obviously they saw it as still binding even after Jesus died. And so that's kind of important, especially since we consider Jesus as our example. The other thing is that Jesus gave a prediction, and he said, hey, Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. This temple is going to be destroyed. And you guys are going to have to flee for your lives. Pray that you don't have to flee on the Sabbath or in the winter. Right? Now, so he's expecting his disciples and his followers to still observe the Sabbath because they're supposed to pray that their flight doesn't happen on that. Well, somebody told me, like, well, this was just practical advice. Because, you know, on the Sabbath day, everything gets shut down, the gates get closed. It's going to be hard to flee on the Sabbath, just practically speaking. I was like, well, that's interesting because there's this guy named Josephus. And Josephus said that when the Roman army surrounded Jerusalem, and for some reason, nobody knows why, even today, they withdrew. They decided to retreat, even though they had no reason to retreat. And when they retreated, all the Jewish army chased after them and emptied the city of any military personnel. And so the only reason, really, for Jesus to say, pray that your flight be not on the winter or in the Sabbath day, is because the Sabbath day, you want to enjoy it, right? You don't want to be running away from Roman armies, right? And that's the only practical reason. The other thing is, it was made in Eden before the fall. You read in Genesis, and it says God rested on the Sabbath day in because from all his works. And he did it, again, as an example for mankind, and as a special day. Here's the Lord of the universe coming every week to spend a whole day with you, right? How important is that? I mean, if you have the most famous person in the universe decided, hey, I want to spend a whole day with you every week, you're like, cool, right? You're like, I must be pretty important if God is going to do that for me. So the Sabbath is vital. Also, the Sabbath, it says in Isaiah, will be kept in the new earth, right? And Isaiah specifically says, as the new heavens and the new earth that I will make will endure before me, so will your name and your descendants endure. From one new moon to another, from one Sabbath to another, will all mankind, doesn't it say, will the Jews, right? Will the Seventh-day Adventists? It says, will all mankind worship and bow down before me, right? So the Sabbath is going to be kept in a new earth. So it's not like a temporary thing that was done away with at the cross. Also, the Sabbath was kept after Jesus by his disciples. It was their custom, it says in Acts 17:2, it was their custom to worship on the Sabbath day. And in fact, Paul himself, who most anti-Sabbatarians cite against Sabbath observance, Paul himself kept the Sabbath at least 84 times, mentioned in the book of Acts. Just himself, just Paul. Preaching on the Sabbath. Also, when John said, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day in Revelation, before that time, the only day that was designated the Lord's Day in Scripture is what? The Sabbath. Only the Sabbath is a designated Lord's Day. So John is also worshiping on Sabbath here, not on Sunday, as a lot of people describe as Lord's Day, and we'll get into in a minute. And Christians also continue to worship in the synagogues. Both Jews and Gentiles continue to worship on the Sabbath according to Acts. There is also no dispute between Christians and Gentiles about, or Jews, Christian and Jews, about Sabbath observance. They got into a lot of arguments about a lot of stuff, but they never argued about the Sabbath. That's very good evidence that the early Christian church was observing the Sabbath at the same time as the Jews were, because they never fought about it. What about the early Christian church in the first and second centuries? What happened to them? Well, the early Christian church in the first, second, and even the third centuries and beyond also worshiped the Sabbath. There is a little historical progression. I'll give you a summary slide here. In the first century, the Sabbath was, at the very beginning of the first century, the Sabbath was observed even after the death and resurrection of Christ. Gradually, though, Sunday observance became popular in the first century. It became more and more popular in honor of the resurrection. And there for a while, for hundreds of years, the Sabbath was observed alongside of Sunday. They both were observed. In the second and third centuries, there was a problem because in the second century, we'll get into this in a little bit more detail, Hadrian, Emperor Hadrian, outlawed Judaism, specifically the Sabbath. And it was on pain of death. And he got so angry with the Jews because they kept revolting. They were very ornery. They kept revolting all the time. And as a Roman emperor, you don't like this revolting all the time thing. And so he destroyed Jerusalem completely, razed it to the ground, and rebuilt it as a Roman city. And he said, no Jews allowed. You Jews could not go back to Jerusalem. Only Christians could. And so Christians also were persecuted by the Jews. And so the Christians didn't really much care for the Jews either. And so they tried to distance themselves, both because of Roman law and because of Jewish persecution. They tried to distance themselves from Judaism and anything resembling Judaism. So they started, the church leaders, especially in Rome and Alexandria, started to allegorize the Sabbath. They started saying, hey, it's the eighth day. Every day is a Sabbath. We should keep all days holy, right? And so they started losing their reverence for the Sabbath day and started favoring Sunday in order to ingratiate themselves with the Romans and also in order to distance themselves from Judaism. However, by the time Constantine comes around, he makes the first Sunday law where it says, hey, this is going to be a state religion and you have to actually keep Sunday holy and take a break and make it a rest day. It's the first time a law actually designated Sunday as a worship day of the state. However, after Constantine, Sabbath made a comeback. People started to recognize that it was still valid, and it started to spread throughout all of the Christian world, East and West. However, more in favor of the East. Eastern churches accepted it more than the Western churches did. Roman and Alexandria were more resistant to accepting the Sabbath as an idea. However, in the centuries after, all the way through the 11th and the 16th century, the Sabbath was kept all over the world except for Roman and Alexandria, and then Sunday observance spread into Europe because of the influence of Rome. Over 100 modern languages, the seventh day is called the Sabbath in one form or another. That's like, that wasn't because of the Jews. That was because of the Christian influence around the whole world, right? So, I mean, if you go in South America, right, what's the name for the seventh day? Sabado, right? This is the Sabbath. No one is, well, what? I wonder what day is the Sabbath here, right? It's the name in the language, right? So that's very interesting. Also, let's go back to the first century. There's this man named Philo. He was born in Alexandria, and he lived during the time of Christ. And this is what he says about the Sabbath. He says, the seventh day is the completion of creation, for it is a festival, not of a single city or country, but the entire universe. In other words, not even this world, according to him. And it alone strictly deserves to be called public as belonging to all people and the birthday of the world. Right? So every week is the birthday of the world. So clearly, the Christians and Jews during Christ's day thought of the Sabbath not just for the Jews, but in universal terms. Right? Polycarp, he was a disciple of St. John, of John, the disciple of Christ. Polycarp observed the Sabbath. And where do you think he got that idea from? Polycarp, again, disciple of John, he was a Nazarene, and Nazarenes historically are known to observe the Sabbath. He was arrested on the day of preparation. What's that? Friday. So he was arrested on Friday. He was executed, martyred. It's a very interesting story of his martyrdom. You have to read it. Because the fire wouldn't burn him. They tried to burn him at the stake, and the fire would just go around him like this. And it wouldn't burn him, so they finally ordered a guard to stab him through the fire to execute him. And he was executed on the Great Sabbath, which is a Sabbath before the Passover. So clearly, he was keeping the Sabbath, and those who wrote about him were also keeping the Sabbath in the East. Polycrates of Ephesus was a disciple of Polycarp, and he also kept the Sabbath, and he was executed eventually on the cross. He was crucified, and he wrote about the law, the Ten Commandments, and he said that keeping the law was still binding upon the Christians, still valid, and eventually, he got executed for this. So, just like crucified like Christ was crucified. Theophilus, he was a bishop in Antioch in the second century. And he said, on 6 days, God finished his works which he has made and rested on the seventh day from all his works which he had made. He's quoting the Sabbath commandment, right? And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it because he rested from all his works which God began to create. And this is during the time when Sunday observance was also becoming popular because of Hadrian. Hadrian in 135 AD. However, Theophilus, in all of his writings, this book, he never mentions Sunday at all, only the Sabbath, which is interesting to me. And he compares keeping the commandments of God to those who keep the commandments of God to fixed stars who don't wander. And he compares those who don't keep the commandments to wandering stars or the types of men who had wandered away from God and abandoned his laws and his commandments. So he upheld the Decalogue, and he didn't write, again, one word concerning Sunday, although it was already popular. What does historians have to say about the early church? The primitive Christians did keep the Sabbath of the Jews until the time of Laodicea, hundreds of years later. Moses Stewart, I'm going to give you a more extensive quote from him because he kind of highlights the decline and then the increase in Sabbath observance over the centuries. So the practices of keeping the Sabbath continued by the Christians who were jealous for the honor of the Mosaic Law and finally became, as we have seen, predominant throughout Christendom. It was supposed at length that the fourth commandment did require the observance of the seventh-day Sabbath, not merely as a seventh part of time, in other words, just any one day of week, pick your day, right? You had specifically picked the seventh-day Sabbath, and reasoning as Christians of the present day are wont to do, in other words, they don't do it, that all of which belongs to the Ten Commandments was immutable and perpetual, the churches in general came to gradually regard the seventh-day Sabbath as altogether sacred. And this happened for hundreds of years. So there were early attempts to remove the Sabbath day from popularity or from observance at all. And again, this is Hadrian. Emperor Hadrian outlawed, again, the practice of Jewish religion because of those honorary Jews who kept revolting all the time. And the response of the church during the second and third centuries, again, was to downplay the Sabbath and allegorize it and saying, well, we're just doing divine work on the day. You know, everything that we do is divine work, and every day is a Sabbath. Every day is blessed by God. And these are a list of the names of the early church leaders who promoted this view of kind of downplaying the Sabbath in order to ingratiate themselves with the Romans and separate themselves from the Jews. So, again, these are the common arguments. Every day is a Sabbath. The eighth day of eternal rest is Sunday, and so that we should enter eternal rest. So, again, every day is treated like the Sabbath. And this is also the first time, this period of time, is the first time that Sunday is referred to officially as the Lord's Day. Before that time, Sunday was never referred to as the Lord's Day, only the first day of the week. Or, except for the Romans, who observed Sunday because of the god, sun god, Sol Invictus. Get to that in a moment. Here is Constantine the Great, Emperor Constantine. Again, he is the first one to initiate, first to accept Christianity as a state religion. Before then, it had just been persecuted all the time. Finally, they got popular and became a state religion. However, Constantine was very shrewd, and he decided, hey, my army worships the sun god, Sol Invictus, on Sunday. The Christians have their Jesus raised on Sunday, right? And they also favor Sunday by this time. They worship on Sunday and Saturday. So why don't I just make Sunday a state holiday, right? So that's what he did. He made Sunday a state holiday in 321. He issued the first Sunday law, except for farmers. Farmers could still work because, you know, you had to make food and stuff. And farming can be random, you know, so you have to make sure you get those crops in when you can. So he exempted farmers from having to rest on Sunday, but everybody else had to rest. Penalty of the state. Again, here's the sun god, Sol Invictus, so he just kind of incorporated his whole army. He marched his army through a river to baptize them all in one shot, right, into the Christian faith. And so he kind of merged everybody together and made everybody happy, right? Except for the Sabbath keepers. And Constantine enacted several Sunday laws during his reign, and then after his reign, at least 15 additional Sunday decrees happened within the next few centuries after his death. And you're like, why in the world so many Sunday laws? Why keep reiterating Sunday laws? Sunday law, Sunday law, Sunday law. Well, the reason is because during this time, Sabbath became more popular, right? Sabbath, hey, this is the law of God. We can't do away with this. So they had to keep reiterating the Sunday laws because people kept ignoring them, right? And so you got to keep reiterating this over the next several centuries. And so Now we're like, well, people keep the Sabbath. We can't stop people from doing this. What are we going to do, right? Because the bishops in Rome and Alexandria say, this is a problem. We keep annoying the Romans again, and they keep having to issue these Sunday laws. What are we going to do? It's like, well, let's make the Sabbath unpopular, right? What can we do to make the Sabbath unpopular? We'll make people fast on the Sabbath. Go hungry all day long, right? That'll make it unpopular, right? Because before then, fasting on the Sabbath was illegal in Jewish culture as well. You can't fast on the Sabbath. It's a celebration. It's a feast day, right? And so Pope Sylvester in the 4th century was the first to order the church to fast on Saturday in order to make it really was in order to make it unpopular. And then Pope Innocent in the 5th century as well made the same order. You have to fast on Saturday. Well, there was some resistance to this. Gregory, he's the bishop of Nyssa, he said, hey, we can't. Maybe we'll observe Sunday, that's fine, but we have to also observe Sabbath as well, because Sabbath is also sacred. In fact, he called them sisters. Sunday and Sabbath, he called sisters, and you had to observe both, because if you didn't observe the Sabbath, according to him, you were blaspheming Sunday as well, right? And so you had to observe both. But there's other people who just said, forget it all. We are going to completely separate with the Jews. And one of those guys, his name was John Chrysostom. He was the Archbishop of Constantinople. And he says, you know, we tolerate the Sabbath observance, but we don't like it, right? We just tolerate it, but we hate it. We think those people are just trying to do what the Jews do, and we want to make a clean break with the Jews. And says, but we go ahead and tolerate it nobly, or rather ignobly and basely, right? So there's starting to be kind of some divergence here. And we got Athanasius. He was the chief Egyptian delegate, a Hellenistic delegate at Nicaea, and the 20th bishop of Alexandria. And he writes about the Sabbath. They go back and forth. He says, on the Sabbath day, we gather together not to be infected with Judaism, for we do not lay hold of the false Sabbath, but we come on Sabbath to worship Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath. And this is 4th century, right? So Apollinaris Sidonius, he was a poet, a diplomat, and a bishop, so kind of gifted guy. He said, it is a fact that it was formerly a custom in the East to keep the Sabbath in the same manner as the Lord's Day and to hold sacred assemblies, while on the other hand, the people of the West contended for the Lord's Day and have neglected celebration of the Sabbath. So here we are in the 5th century, and there start to become a noticeable division between East and West regarding Sabbath observance. And this was pointed out by several people. Socrates Scholasticus, not the Greek Socrates, this is the 5th century historian, Socrates of Constantinople. He said, for although almost all churches throughout the world celebrate sacred mysteries on the Sabbath of every week, yet the Christians of Alexandria and Rome, on some account of some ancient tradition, I mean, it's already the 5th century by then, so that's ancient, right? Have ceased to do this. So Roman Alexandria held out for Sunday-only observance, whereas everybody else went for both, Sabbath and Sunday, right? Sozomen, also 5th century, he says, the people of Constantinople and almost everywhere assemble together on the Sabbath. Constantinople is in the East, right? The Eastern Church, Eastern Orthodox. They assemble on the Sabbath as well as the first day of the week, so they kept both days, which custom is never observed in Rome or Alexandria. Only Sunday in Rome and Alexandria, right? So there's starting to be a separation between East and West here. Now, you have to understand something. The reason for this is because of a book called the Apostolic Constitutions. This book was a collection of letters and articles thought to be written by the apostles or the very earliest Christians, and it was collected over several hundred years, between the early 1st century and probably the 3rd or 4th century AD. All right? And so, this book was highly venerated by the East, the Eastern Church, whereas the Western Church said, hey, we're going to do our own thing on the authority of the church itself, right? The Eastern Church said, no, we're going to do it on the authority of the apostles, right? And so this is what the Apostolic Constitution said. It said, have before your eyes the fear of God and always remember the Ten Commandments of God. So they weren't done away with, according to Apostolic Constitutions. To love one and only the Lord God with all your strength, to give no heed to idols or other beings as being lifeless gods or irrational beings or demons. Consider the manifold workmanship of God, which received its beginning through Christ. It said, thou shalt observe the Sabbath on account of him who ceased from his work of creation, but ceased not from his work of providence. It is a rest for meditation of law, not for idleness of the hands. Let slaves work 5 days, but on Sabbath day, and on the Lord's day, or Sunday, let them have leisure to go to church for instruction in piety. We have said that the Sabbath is on account of creation, and the Lord's day is on account of the resurrection. So they allowed the slaves to keep both days. If any one of the clergy be found to fast on the Lord's day, or on the Sabbath day, except only one Sabbath, and that's Easter Sabbath, because that's the Sabbath when Jesus was in the tomb. That's the only day you could fast. If you fasted on any other Sabbath throughout the rest of the year, let him be deprived, but if one of the laity, let him be suspended. In other words, there are punishments for this. So, in other words, if you were just a regular church member, you were out if you fasted on the Sabbath. No fasting on the Sabbath, right? Otherwise, you're out of here. Right? I was like, okay, I got to eat, right? So, but if you were a pastor, you were defrocked. You were now no longer a pastor. It was a serious business to fast on the Sabbath, believe it or not. The Council of Trullo, this was an Eastern council held in the East, and only Eastern bishops came to the council. None of the representatives of Rome came, except maybe one. But it was primarily Eastern council, and the results of this council are rejected by the Roman church today. All right, so, like, what did this council say? It says, if any cleric, they cited the apostolic constitutions, they quoted them. It says, if any cleric shall be found to fast on Sunday or on Saturday, except during Easter weekend, he is to be deposed. And if he is a layman, he shall be cut off. You're out, right? So this started a great schism. It's called the Great Schism between the East and the West. You know, this might have to be a two-part series. Are you guys interested, or you want to keep going? All right, there's a great schism between the East and the West. And as the Roman Empire itself was divided, so was the church divided between the East and the West. Pope Leo IX, he said he thought himself in charge because he inherited the leadership of the church from Peter. He said, the Holy See possesses both an earthly and a heavenly imperium, the royal priesthood. Only the apostolic successor to Peter possesses primacy in the church. So I'm in charge, basically, guys. All right? Said, however, the Eastern Church primarily claimed to be successors of St. Andrew, the first apostle, and St. John. They weren't claiming succession from Peter. All right? So, which is interesting. And so, the patriarch of the Eastern Church, his name is Michael Salarius, and he ticked off Pope Leo a bunch of times. First of all, Pope Leo would write to him as my son. And Michael Salarius would write back to the Pope as my brother. He would refuse to call the Pope father. And so that really ticked off Pope Leo. Anyway, the two biggest issues between the East and the West were not fasting on the Sabbath day and using only unleavened bread for the Eucharist or the communion service, which in Rome they were using leavened bread. So those were the two big things for Michael Salarius that caused a great schism between the church. So eventually Pope Leo said, hey, I'm going to send some of my representatives to give you a talking to. And Michael Salarius, when they first showed up in Constantinople, he refused to see them for several months. And finally, when he did grant them an audience, he was very upset by the information coming from Pope Leo, and he basically told Pope Leo he could take his declarations and go back home, right? And so, since they weren't getting anywhere with Michael Salarius, eventually, on Sabbath day, they put an excommunication bowl on the altar of the church in Constantinople, and they walked back home. And when Michael Salarius found the excommunication bowl on the altar, he was so angry that he excommunicated the Catholic Church and the Pope and removed his name from the church records of the East. And after that, there was a great schism, the great schism of 1054. And so that's the story in short. Cardinal Humbert, which was one of the guys who put the bowl on the excommunication bowl on the altar, he He wrote about the experience and the reasons why this was a problem, a separation between the East and the West. It says, because you observe the Sabbath with the Jews and with us on Sunday, the Lord's Day, you appear by such obstinance to imitate the sect of the Nazarenes, who in this manner accept Christianity that they might not give up Judaism. And so he accused them of being like the Nazarenes who kept the Sabbath and says, hey, you guys need to get with the program and obey the authority of the church. Otherwise, you guys are just a bunch of Judaizers. So many churches still continue to observe the Sabbath, East and West, during this time. St. Patrick, who is a Catholic saint now, observed the Sabbath, of all things. And so there's evidence for this, there's historical evidence. St. Patrick observed the Sabbath. In fact, when the papal delegates came to Ireland to talk to Patrick and to the Celtic churches, they disregarded them. They didn't consider them to have any authority whatsoever. And they kicked them out, or they just left, basically, because they had no authority there. And it wasn't until later that the Catholic Church, because of the popularity of St. Patrick, accepted him as a saint. So it was also the Celts, Ireland, Scotland, they all kept the Sabbath until Queen Margaret showed up on the scene in the 1500s, and she's the one who basically forced them, or coerced them, to switch over to Sunday. Before that time, it was all Sabbath observance. Again, here's a bunch of languages that use the seventh day of Sabbath. Why don't all Christians observe the Sabbath today? Of course, the Catholic Church makes it very clear that the reason why they don't observe the Sabbath is because of the authority of the church alone. We transfer the holiness from Sabbath to Sunday, and it's based entirely on the authority of the church, not on the Bible whatsoever. And we got our authority from God himself, since the Pope is a vicar of Christ. And they say, hey, you Protestants who observe Sunday, you pay homage to the Catholic Church despite yourself, right? So if you really want to be Bible-believing the Bible and Bible only, you need to go by Saturday, by the Sabbath. Otherwise, you're observing a doctrine of the church. So what do the Eastern Orthodox churches say, and Orthodox churches in general? Well, it's interesting. The Orthodox churches since 1054, the split with Rome, they observed the Sabbath for hundreds and hundreds of years. And in fact, they still observe the Sabbath today. But Sunday has gained more and more prominence, so Sunday is a superior day in their mind. But they still observe, they still keep the Sabbath holy today. Like Eastern Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, they still observe Sabbath and consider it a holy day, which is still interesting. Luther himself, he got in a big debate with Dr. Eck. And Eck won the debate because Luther said, hey, you don't know anything about the Bible. And Dr. Eck says, well, I don't need to because of authority of the church, which you recognize because you observe Sunday, right? And so Eck won the debate because Luther was so stunned by this that he couldn't respond. Because obviously Luther had no biblical basis to stand on for observing Sunday rather than the Sabbath. In fact, it's very unusual. Luther, the reason I believe he did not keep the Sabbath is because he was a strong anti-Semite. He hated the Jews, right? And that is, I think, the only reason he didn't keep the Sabbath. Because he writes a lot of really interesting stuff about the Sabbath. He said, this is Luther, he said, God blessed the Sabbath and sanctified it to himself. It is moreover to be remarked that God did this to no other creature. He did not sanctify to himself heaven or the earth or any other creature, but God did sanctify himself the seventh day. This was especially designed of God to cause us to understand the seventh day to be especially devoted to divine worship. It follows, therefore, from this passage that if Adam had stood in his innocence and had not fallen, he would yet have observed the seventh day as sanctified, holy and sacred. And he goes on to say that Adam and Eve taught their children to observe the Sabbath. So why in the world didn't Luther observe it? It boggles my mind. It's only because he was so strongly anti-Semitic, in my mind, because he wrote such amazing things about the Sabbath. So what are some common arguments against the Sabbath? I'll go blow through these really quick. The most common one is Colossians 2:16 through 17, where Paul says, do not let anybody judge you about what you eat or drink, or with regard to Sabbath days, right? And what most people don't read is the next verse, verse 17. He says, because these are a shadow of things to come, right? Now, there were Sabbaths in the Old Testament that were pointed toward the life and death of Christ, right? Same with the sacrificial services, they were shadows pointing toward Jesus. But the Ten Commandments are moral laws. They don't point toward anything. In fact, if you want to say the Sabbath points to something, it points toward a past event, right? It doesn't foreshadow anything. It's not a shadow of something to come. And people don't really incorporate that into their thinking. It's like, the Sabbath is not a memorial to be done away with that's fulfilled at the cross. It's that points toward creation, and it will always point toward creation. Right? So this is a different thing. Paul is not talking about the weekly Sabbath. He's talking about the ceremonial Sabbaths that point toward the life and death of Christ. And Hebrews makes this even more clear, even though it's often cited by anti-Sabbatarians. It says, in Hebrews, Paul says, the law is only a shadow of good things that are to come, not the realities themselves. Well, what law is he talking about here? Well, obviously, from the next sentence, it says, for this reason, it can never, by the same sacrifices repeated endlessly year after year, make perfect those who draw near to worship God. What do the sacrifices represent? Jesus. So when Jesus came, those shadows met their reality in Jesus, right? Shadow sacrifices met the reality in Christ. So he's talking about the shadow laws of the ceremonial services having to do with the temple. He's not talking about the Ten Commandments. Because Paul goes on, I mean, here's somebody, is it still wrong to covet thy neighbor's ice cream? Right? Yeah, it's still wrong to do all these things. And Paul points that out. He says, hey, he lists the commandments. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not murder. You shall not steal. You shall not covet. Whatever other command there may be summed up in this one command, love your neighbor as yourself. Right? So he cites all the Ten Commandments, and in fact, he personally observes the Sabbath as well. So he's not trying to get away with the law of the Ten Commandments. He's just trying to explain the importance and the necessity of the ceremonial laws. The other argument is that Jesus himself broke the Sabbath on purpose to lessen its significance for the new covenant, right? And so, did Jesus break the Sabbath? Yes or no? Yes, he did. Because, let me explain. Does the pastor break the Sabbath when he gets up to preach and do most of his work during the week on the Sabbath? Yes or no? Yes, he does. But is he doing that lawfully or unlawfully? Lawfully. Because Jesus himself said, hey, haven't you read the law that the priests on Sabbath duty in the temple desecrate or break the Sabbath and yet are what? Innocent, right? So is it possible to break the Sabbath and still be innocent? Yes, it's possible. It depends what you're doing, right? And so according to Jesus, Jesus asked them, hey, you experts in the law, you Pharisees, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? But they remained silent. Why did they remain silent? Because they knew it was lawful, right? It was according to their own law. And he asked them, which is lawful to do on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy it? But they were silent. Then he asked them, if one of you has a child or an ox even, a human being or even an animal, that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull it out? Right? He's asking a question. And then he says, you hypocrites. The Lord replied, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the stall and lead it to water? In other words, even if it's not an emergency, not even in a well or a pit or anything, you guys still water your animals. How much more so a human being? Right? He says, how much more valuable a person than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. So there's reasons why you can break the Sabbath. Helping somebody in need, even if it's an animal, right? God likes animals, right? It's even in the fourth commandment that you should let your animals have a break on the Sabbath. And it's interesting that God cares about animals, even little sparrows that fall to the ground. And so he says, hey, it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath, even for an animal, and it's lawful to do God's work on the Sabbath. If you're doing God's work and not your own pleasure, you're out there working for God on the Sabbath, trying to spread the gospel for whatever it takes, that's lawful to do on the Sabbath. And then he said, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. In other words, hey, I made this day, and I intended it to be a blessing for mankind, not a burden, right? It's supposed to be a fun day, a festive day, a feast day, time for me to get together with my people for one day, all day out of every week. Right? So this is supposed to be a good thing. And you guys have turned it into a curse. So Jesus still went around healing on the Sabbath day. In fact, he made a point to heal on the Sabbath day in order to point out, hey, this is supposed to be a good day for everybody, especially those who are hurting. Right? Again, special day, free from secular pursuits, just to spend devoted to God and doing God's work. So why a particular day a week? Isn't it enough that we worship God on one day every week? Why the seventh day? What does that matter? Because isn't that arbitrary? And yes, the answer is yes, it is arbitrary. Because it's a symbol. The arbitrariness is a symbol. Are you going to do what God says just because he said so or not? It's something like my kids. Well, why do I have to do that? And sometimes I can't explain it to them. I was like, are you on my side or not? Right? And this is a symbol. If you're on my side, this is the way we're going to do it. Right? And the same thing. God does this quite regularly. He did it with Adam and Eve. Every tree is yours except for this one. Is that arbitrary? This one you cannot eat of. I arbitrarily said so. Is it because the tree was poisonous? No, it was good to look at, good to eat, right? It wasn't because it was poisonous. It's just because God said so, and that was it, right? And the same thing happened with Cain and Abel. He says, I want a sheep, right? And, well, isn't that arbitrary, God? How about if I bring the best of all the other stuff that I have that aren't sheep? Nope, only a sheep, right? And that's arbitrary. And Cain didn't do it, and God didn't honor his sacrifice. Abel did, and God honored his. And he just did it because it's a symbol of if you're on God's side or not. Same thing happened with King Saul. He said, hey, wipe out the Amalekites, everything, even the animals. And Saul said, well, I brought back the animals, the best of the animals for sacrifice. And what was God's reply to that? He said, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed is better than the fat of rams. Are you on my side or not? Right? The other argument is Sabbath given only to the Jews. It wasn't made before the Jews. However, the fourth commandment cites Genesis as the reason for its existence, right? It doesn't say, hey, this started with the Jews. Jesus also said in Mark 2:27, I made the Sabbath for mankind. The word there is anthropos. It means mankind. It didn't say, I made the Sabbath for the Jews. And anthropos, saying it's actually another term, if you look at the original context of the Hebrew there, it's another term for Adam. I made, and he says, there's a qualifier there. I made the Sabbath for the anthropos, or the man. And the word the man is reference to Adam. The man is always in reference to Adam in the Bible. And so he says, I made the Sabbath for Adam. And so, again, a reference to Genesis. The Talmud and also the Midrash, the Jewish legal documents written in after the death of Christ, also mentioned that the Sabbath was existed before Moses. Abraham and the patriarchs, according to the Talmud, observed the Sabbath. Philo, again, he said Sabbath is universal. Martin Luther also said the Sabbath was created in Eden, even though he'd never observed it. And it's part of the universal code stored in the Ark of the Covenant, where all the other codes were not. There's this other new thing. It's called the Lunar Sabbath. And it basically says that the weekly Sabbath is returned every month, and it doesn't matter what day of the week the rest of the world is looking at. Every month you start over and start the week over. So the Sabbath is always on the 8th, 15th, 20th, 22nd, and 29th day of the month. And where did they get this idea from? Well, the first one to come up with this, and you'd think I'm crazy here, but this is becoming popular idea. This guy came up with it. His name is David Brown. He was anti-Semite. He was arrested for shooting up a Jewish synagogue. And anyway, he's the first one to observe this. But now it's becoming popular, and it's based, ironically, on the ancient Assyrians, who on the 13th month, because they had to do skip months to make up for their differences in the calculation of the year, the 13th month and the 18th month, they used a lunar calendar in honor of their moon god, and that's the picture of the moon god. And they celebrate the 7th, 14th, 19th, and 21st, and the 28th days of the month, which is only one day off from the lunar calendar being promoted now. So it's based on paganism, the lunar Sabbath calendar, and the cycle of the seven-day week that's in Genesis and Exodus is based on God trying to avoid any pagan appearance, because the Sabbath has to be distinct from any astrological, like you don't want to be tempted to worship the moon or the sun, or the Sabbath is arbitrarily just based on a repeated weekly cycle. You can't judge the Sabbath based on the moon or the sun or anything else. It's a continuous cycle that's not, you can't determine any other way. And what's interesting about this is that a lot of people argue because the Assyrians and Babylonians had this monthly cycle Sabbath thing, where the seventh day was considered to be actually unlucky, dangerous to do anything on that day because you would not succeed. It was an evil day It was called an evil day. And so how did the Sabbath get derived from that? Because a lot of historians say the Sabbath from the Jews got derived from the Babylonians. But it turns out, which came first? It turns out that the seventh-day cycle is in biology. It's in genetics. It's in DNA. Every living thing has a septocircadian cycle, a seven-day cycle that governs all the other circadian rhythms for every living thing. That's why you have to take antibiotics for more than a week, and that's how the enamel, even in your teeth, grows on a weekly cycle. Every living thing, even little bacteria, single-cell bacteria, have a weekly cycle. There's these bees in Brazil. They actually rest on the seventh day, on the actual Sabbath day. They don't go out and fly around and collect pollen and honey and stuff. They take a break and hang out at the hive. And they're like the Sabbath-keeping bees of Brazil. But anyway, every living thing has a seven-day cycle. So it's more consistent with the Bible's approach to say, hey, I made the seventh day as a benefit for all mankind, in fact, for every living thing, to have a seven-day cycle. So it didn't come from the Babylonians or the Assyrians. It came from God. So, again, in the final analysis, this is the last slide, the Sabbath is also going to be important in the future. It's going to be a future symbol of if you're with God or not. And Jesus says, hey, I made the heaven and earth the springs of water. Here in Revelation, this is quoting Exodus. You can see the parallel. It says, look, fear God and give glory to him. This is talking about the time of the end, right? Because the hour of his judgment has come. Worship him who made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and the springs of water. Where did he get that passage from? John is quoting Exodus. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that in them is. It's in the same sequence. The heavens, the earth, the sea. See that? And all that in them. He's plagiarizing, right? The Ten Commandments. And he rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the seventh day and made it holy. In other words, it's not a too subtle hint that says, hey, look, Sabbath commandment's still binding and it's going to be important at the end of time, right? Whose side are you on? And for some reason, and I don't know how, to be honest with you, I don't know how the Sabbath issue is going to become prominent throughout the world. But according to the Bible and also according to Ellen White, it will be. It will be a prominent issue and it will be a deciding issue on what side you're on. And you might say, hey, it's arbitrary, it's symbolic, and yes, it is. But these arbitrary and symbolic things are important. Which day that you worship on, it says, hey, what day did God actually say to worship on? And if you go with the letter, say, hey, if you love me, keep my commandments, even if they're arbitrary, it's going to be a symbolism of who you're in love with. If my wife said, hey, this is something I like, I was like, well, that's rather arbitrary, right? But I like it. What am I going to do? Right? If I want to sleep in my own bed, right? I don't care if it's arbitrary, that's what I'm going to do. And it's what you do for somebody you love, right? It doesn't matter if they like that, you do it, right? And so that's all I have for you today. And if you want more, there's a lot more available. So thank you very much for your time, and I'm sorry I went over. So happy Sabbath.